Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this, Thursday? It's Thursday, Ray.
Oh, yeah. And it's am I the panel today?
Yes, you're the panel.
All right. I'll argue with myself, which is pretty much how I operate most of the time.
I was going to say, so what else is new? It's the 19th. You know what today is?
Yeah, it's the 4 days after the Ides of March.
Yep, and St. Joseph's Day.
St. Joseph's Day.
That's right.
So you'll celebrate?
With aspirin.
With aspirin. Yeah, good for you. Go. Oh, here comes the rest
morning.
Of the panel.
Here comes our panel.
The
this
lesser
morning.
Panel is now here.
This is a new way of doing it. We'll introduce the panel that you'll stay out, and then we'll say, "Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Chartok," and then you'll make your entrance.
Hey.
That's great. And then following up, we have Poughkeepsie Journal editor Stu Shinsky, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, hi. Is this already in progress?
Yes. You're right on time.
It's a nice time.
Yeah. You are right on time.
This is one time where I can blame the media.
How was the media project, gents?
It was good. We learned all about something from Rex that we had never heard of before. You guys
is
remember
it salacious?
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys remember your geometry where the convex meets the concave?
Yes.
You know what that's called?
Remember, we're radio people.
You said yes way too fast.
You can say it on the air.
You can. It's called the inflection point.
The inflection point.
Yeah, where the concave meets the
convex. Convex.
Yeah.
And that's the inflection point.
Right.
Okay, so how does that deal with Ray?
Well, you'll have to listen to
tune in Sunday
program.
At 6 p.m., Joe.
Right.
Let us just say I made a comment that Rex seemed to think was funny, and that was that I knew somebody. It reminded me of somebody, you know, the inflection point reminded me of somebody. That's all.
I got you.
He thought
all right.
Funny.
Do you in fact have him?
No.
No, you don't.
Do you?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Well, tune in for the media project.
That's right. As Stu so astutely pointed out, all questions will be answered when we listen to the media project on Sunday. Let me introduce. They're all here. You've heard from everybody, but let me introduce them anyway. WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir.
Yo.
The invection point himself.
Yeah.
Infection point.
Ray Graff is with us. Thank
Hi,
you very
everybody.
Much. Ray and Stu Shinsky, who has made it up the thruway and is the editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal and gets to join us every couple weeks, and we're more than pleased when he is a presence. So
that was a great interview
much.
Last week, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
You and
good,
Alan
good
had a nice discussion.
I heard from a lot of people in his family.
Yes, I did. A lot of people said I've never, ever sounded that good. And
yeah,
I immediately credited Alan and the wonderful David Gustino, who did the editing, who made me sound somewhat literate.
He does. And is Sarah LaDuke here?
Sarah is here. Why?
She's there doing her usual wonderful producing. Because I know if she's not here, she's going to get my device from my desk so that I can read the letters.
Oh, I'm sure she will.
That was a coding
I'm
message.
Sure she will. If she is...
Isn't that against the law?
Sure, certainly is, sir. But pray continue with the infection.
See, it's the concave and the
convex.
Convex, and you got the...
Yeah. I think of the show more as obtuse.
You would?
The isosceles news report.
Oh, boy. Here we go. All right. So let's... you know what? Let's take a break, Dave,
yes.
And then we'll come back. We'll
Already?
Get everything all set. Well, just we'll get everything set because I saw Sarah got your thing, so yeah. we're all set. She'll be able to give that to you. You'll be able to get set up.
Yeah.
We'll be
I
able
have this
to...
other device.
Oh, all right.
Tell you what, let's come back in April.
After the snow ends?
We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Audiologic Solutions, East Greenbush and Hudson, working to help patients reclaim their hearing and prevent further hearing loss. AudiologicSolutions.org. Emma Willard, an all-girl boarding school working to help students discover their own voices. EmmaWillard.org. And Sunwood Builders, Amherst. Over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features. Sunwood-Builders.com.
Thank you. Good morning, and welcome back to our roundtable panel. And I think we got all of our ducks in a row.
Yep, looks like it.
Yep, look, quack.
And we welcome you to our program. The one thing I didn't let you know about before was how you can get in on the discussion. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. So there is no excuse because there are so many options. Let us begin with the tragedy that happened yesterday. Gunmen in military uniforms killed 19 people on Wednesday in a midday attack on a museum in downtown Tunis, dealing a new blow to the tourist industry that is vital to Tunisia as it struggles to consolidate the only transition to democracy after the Arab Spring revolts. Tunisian officials had initially said that the attackers took 10 hostages and killed 9 people, including 7 foreign visitors and 2 Tunisians. When security forces retook the museum about 4 hours later, however, the death toll more than doubled, raising questions about how and at what point the hostages had died. The prime minister said in a news conference that security forces had killed 2 gunmen inside the museum, but that 2 or 3 accomplices might still be at large. And we are getting information now that at least 1, if not 2, of those suspects have been apprehended.
That's what CNN is reporting.
Yes.
Others had been killed.
And yes, the 2 killed and then 2 others. And we are still unsure if there are, is there an, another who is still at large, but we will, I'm sure, find out about that as news becomes more concrete. Obviously there is the issue of the terror act itself. And then also, the not lesser issue, but the underlying issue of the blow that this deals to the democratic shift within the country.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it the same? Isn't it a mirror of what all democratic countries have to deal with in the face of this? Do you ratchet security up and tighten liberties, or do you let things go and have more liberties and less safety? It's the classic argument. And now Tunisia, being sort of the preeminent democracy there, they have to deal with this.
It's the one example of the Arab Spring that really turns out to have been, you know, the blueprint for everybody else. There's been very little success except for Tunisia. So it makes great sense that these, what are the words you could use on radio that I cannot be allowed to use? Let's just say it starts with B. Get done, because they have to go after Tunisia because it proves the point that you can orderly and in democratic fashion do this. So if you're the head guy in Tunisia, the head person, you have to say, we are, to your point, Ray, we're going to crack down on these people with everything we have, because people's security is everything.
It's survival. The folks from the Islamic State, ISIS, have basically said there is no way that they want Tunisia to be any sort of democratic government.
Exactly.
And they will do everything in their power, and this is going to mean, yes, they are going to, in essence, have to change every bit of approach that they have in Tunisia and think security for everything, because the attack on tourists here, I don't think, is accidental.
Oh, no.
This is an economic blow as well as a physical blast of attack.
As far as I know, no one has claimed responsibility.
True.
Interestingly, nothing in the museum apparently was harmed. So whether it was ISIS or not, I guess, is a secondary point. Its proximity to Europe is certainly a key point and probably a key concern for those in Europe today.
And there will be, inevitably, because we hear from them from time to time here on the show, those who claim that this is the way in which the government, does this kind of, I reject it categorically, by the way. I think it's nonsense. But that the government will can clamp down and have its way with its population, as Ray has suggested, even not meaning to, I'm sure, that the government can get away from the democratic mold and go more into the oligarchical mold. There will be some who say that. I am not one of them. But it's clear that terrorism is the modality which these people operate with.
Well, will they seek assistance from other nations? Will there be people who will, in essence, support Tunisia in this? What will be the larger, broader geographic reaction to this?
You'll probably never know.
Yeah.
I mean, if they have the FBI flying over there to help them with their security, I don't think that's going to be a bragging point.
That's not going to fly.
Just as far as the logistics go, the Tunisian officials said Wednesday that attackers might have originally sought to target Parliament itself and then shifted to the adjacent museum. And if you look at the there's a great graph in the New York Times, but the National Parliament building is just if you consider like
right next door.
White House, you know, sort of a White House mall type complex. It is just one building over it. It is adjacent to it, and then it perhaps they went to that museum because of the security, of course, is tight, but less formidable than getting into national
much
into
less yes at a museum and much more at Parliament. So they had chosen an easier target.
And again, going to the question is to bolster the point of going after the tourists specifically, as opposed to other. So we will find out. I'm sure we'll find out more. I was looking up to see the latest numbers, and actually, I haven't seen anything yet about arrests made. So I guess we'll
keep an eye on that.
Yeah, we'll wait and see.
We heard from David, Joe, who said, I just wanted to make a connection of Tunis and Israel. There was at one time 100,000 Jews living there in that country, and they left their country in the 1950s to travel to Israel. These Jews were fully integrated in Tunisian society, but it became too dangerous. Please keep this in mind while discussing Israel. Israelis come from all these North African and Arabic countries. Thanks, David.
All right.
Thought I'd mention that.
Also, the other thing is that Tunisia's president this morning vowed to expand the country's merciless war against terrorism after gunmen killed the foreign tourists and the three Tunisians in this attack. But even as global condemnation flowed in following Wednesday's assault on the world-famous National Barda Museum in Tunis, many said that they were... we shouldn't note that one of the suspects was known to intelligence services, but they said that they would, with all of this condemnation, still great questions remaining as to what the future would hold. And so, as Ray mentioned, we will we'll keep our eye on that. Let's move on to if there are no other letters, Alan.
There are a couple of letters.
Oh, okay.
They may lead us in a direction you're not ready for yet. But Rich writes, the Westchester County executive is a loose cannon. There are ways to improve the economy in Westchester that WMC will not discuss. He is concerned about local prison costs. You then find alternative ways to that. We have too many Americans in prison who do not need to be there. Dutchess Orange and Westchester County executives are far worse bullies than Cuomo. I don't know what that's in reaction to. Does anybody else?
I have no idea. Unless it was an earlier report within the context of our newscast, but I don't know.
It could be. And I have to say there's a new poll out today, an extraordinary poll, that shows people are down on the governor for his education policies and by a huge margin say that the teachers and the teachers' union are better equipped to advise on education than is the governor. There are many of us who just don't understand what he's up to, why the governor keeps picking at this scab. I've never understood it. I've always said I didn't understand. I didn't agree with it, but I never understood what the political motivation for this was.
He's basically made the point that New York State spends X dollars on education, and he basically feels that the scholastic achievement does not merit that level of spending.
Well,
that's been the basis of his foundation. The question is, how do you get it fixed? And then we had Common Core come through and race to the top, and then Common Core turned out to be in many circles a disaster.
Yeah,
so
the rollout.
Where does it go from here?
Well, yes, and then Cuomo puts into his, you know, a huge charter school fan, but also wants to give vouchers to parochial and I believe parochial and private schools. And that has not sat well with an awful lot of people also because the state has a tradition of not doing that.
And he had the fight with de Blasio in the city over the charter schools as well.
Well, yes, and then people started attributing motives to him that he wanted to get money for his campaigns from the very rich people who support the, you know, who get out front on these charter schools, and you know, from that point of view, it seems to be a losing proposition for the governor.
Meanwhile, there is a poll out in just the 1 minute we have before we'll go to a news break at the bottom of the hour. There is a new poll out regarding the president of the United States and his approval rating with at 50%. Is that a good number?
Well, no, it's not a good number in that it's Mario Cuomo used to say to me all the time, once you go under 50%, you're cooked. He was higher, much higher, and he's now down to 50%. If the trajectory were going up and he was at 50%, that would be good news for him. I'm sure Obama would like that.
This particular poll says that 50% say that he's been a success.
Are you talking about President Obama?
Yes.
Okay. That was the misunderstanding.
I thought
you
were talking about Cuomo. Yes, you're so right, Ray. Thank you for that. Yeah. So 50% would be successful for this president.
Yeah, it's up.
And his numbers are
up. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
And his numbers are going up. As the economic conditions in this country improve, which they are.
Let us take a break. We will come back and talk about other stuff. We welcome you to join our conversation, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. A reminder, you can also go on our website, which is WAMC.org/roundtable, and you will see a listing for our panel for today, which is 3:19:15, and you can click on that and be an interactive part of our discussion as well. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff, Stu Shinsky, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments as well. It's probably this point in the week where we should mention Rosemary Armeo is still very much a part of our group.
Oh, yeah. Oh, now who is she?
Yeah.
And we haven't gotten any letters saying, how dare you
That's
kick
right.
off
that,
Rosemary.
That was what I was trying to avoid. I just wanted to mention that Rosemary will be back on Monday, or so we are told.
Well, maybe.
As long as all the paperwork comes through from the Fed.
She has her shots.
Yeah,
she'll be allowed back in. And
hi, Rosemary, wherever you are.
she'll return and we'll be back. So I just wanted to let you know. And thanks to everyone who's been doing so wonderfully filling in. We appreciate that as well. Now, let's go on to some other stories. And the White House on Wednesday pointedly criticized Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's successful re-election campaign and suggested his newly declared opposition to a Palestinian state could jeopardize America's unwavering support for Israel at the United Nations. This report from the Washington Post, the blunt comments by Obama administration officials illustrated how the campaign tactics that Netanyahu used to win an unexpectedly strong victory in Tuesday's election have further strained the historic ties between the U.S. and Israel.
Hmm. Well, what do you think, Stu?
I think that this is these boys better start playing well together. This just strikes me as a stuff that just shouldn't need to happen. You know, the White House is not happy that Netanyahu backed away from the two-state solution that he had backed very publicly for a long time, and now they're talking about the UN. But you know what? Israel needs the United Nations and the United States.
Precisely.
And Netanyahu is clearly trying to appeal to the conservatives who say, you know what? No second state. We like it just the way it is. And how is this going to end up? Well, I don't think Barack Obama and Benjamin Netanyahu have really even liked each other, at least as I can perceive from the media reports. So there's a larger issue here, and I think they have to basically get their heads out of the sand and figure this out in a productive manner.
Well, as you know, the United Nations has never been a friend to Israel, not since they passed that very important resolution early in the game. And they regularly pass resolutions which would really basically decapitate Israel.
Destroy Israel.
That's right. And the United States has always been the one that exercises the veto.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that looming over all of this. Now, do I believe that the president of the United States is going to abstain as opposed to veto such a resolution in the future? I do not. I think he would be irresponsible. I think he knows it, and I think he's basically caught on that one. But we are the only ones who do it. and that Security Council, and it becomes...
Who back Israel.
Who back Israel, yes. Well, who say, no, you can't do this to Israel. Mm-hmm. That's why this is so appalling to me. I think Netanyahu was wrong. I think he threw the curveball, at the very end, hoping to preserve his time in office, and I think it was irresponsible, but who am I?
Given that the polls were so wrong, do you think he now regrets making that statement when in 2009 he had the vision of a two-state solution, and then right at the end, when all the polls said he was in deep trouble, when in fact he was not, he made that statement. So as an armchair Monday morning quarterback, is saying, geez, I shouldn't have said that.
I think you got it wrong. And that's with my profound respect for your intellectual capability, Ray, and I mean that.
The polls were not wrong.
I think you're one of the smartest guys in the world. No, in fact, the polls were not wrong. The polls had it right.
So there was that much of a swing from that statement?
Yes, yes. At that moment, the polls had it right. There's a snapshot in time, as we always say. And what happened is he went out there and he played this card. And he said, as long as I'm prime minister, no two-state solution. That's what he said.
Well, you have labeled it a Hail Mary pass from the beginning, and that's certainly what it seemed. And by all accounts, at least only going from the polls, it certainly worked.
Yeah, see, Ray's premise is he was going to win anyway. People were angry. They were saying stuff. I don't want to put words in his mouth.
No, you do that all the time.
Yeah, right. I get it. But I think that it really did make for a severe change. Look, we are talking about people's perception of what security they need. They have bought the premise. I don't know. I'm just telling you, they bought the premise that the Arab leadership of some of these countries and of the Palestinians is so horrible that there can never be a two-state solution, because as soon as there is, then they'll go on to the next plan, the next part of it. They believe that. You can't argue with the fact that they believe it. And so when Netanyahu brings that up, they buy it, and that's why he won.
To Ray's point, though, it does seem that they were saying it was a squeaker. Even the exit poll showed that it was going to, some showed that it was a very slim margin of victory. Some said that it wasn't a victory at all. And then when all the dust settled, it was a fairly sound.
Oh, he won big.
Yeah,
Netanyahu won big.
Yeah. So to Ray's point of maybe there was a little more support there than
subliminal
was originally.
Support. Yeah. Well, we just heard from Bob, who I don't agree with. Alan, 70 years ago, the Jewish people suffered a Holocaust. Most of the survivors of that horror are long dead, and now their descendants in Israel trade on that past to legitimize their oppression to the Palestinian people for purposes of territorial security. Alan, I take exception to your position that Israel or any other country has an absolute right to exist because of an historical tragedy, regardless of how tyrannically it behaves in the present. And here comes my favorite sentence in the note. And yes, that is the clear implication of your position, even if you don't say it in so many words. Now, let me just say, I do say it. I do say it. It is the rationale. It's the greatest, one of the greatest tragedies, if not the greatest tragedy, that has ever befallen mankind. It was a position that the world took in creating the state of Israel. I believe that they have an absolute right to exist. Now, let me just say that with that said, I take great exception to what Netanyahu has done here. I happen to think a two-state solution could be possible. You'd have to work it out. You'd have to make it work. So please, Bob, don't put words in my mouth.
Do we have any other letters?
I'm sure we do. We have one on... No, I don't think so. Do you see anything?
I don't. No. Okay, so let's move on to another issue and find out what else is making news here. Unless, is everybody done on this topic? Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Calling once, calling twice. We now move on to the budget and the president chiding the GOP over proposed program cuts. The president was in Cleveland, Ohio yesterday. He denounced the Republicans' latest budget as stingy and short-sighted, taking them to task for proposing to cut domestic programs that he said would yield more jobs and economic benefits for working people who are struggling financially. The president announced new initiatives, including about $230 million in federal money to aid American manufacturers. And he argued that the Republican Party would set back the nation's economic recovery and hurt workers who have not yet had the chance to profit from it.
Same baseball game, different inning, same garbage, back and forth, rhetoric this way, rhetoric that way. Democrats want this, Republicans don't want that. Here we go again. Wake me up when it's over and let me know when actual change will happen, please.
And I suspect you'll see very little. Yeah, no, that's sort of cynical, but you I don't think you're going to see a change. I think, in other words, the status quo is going to be the status quo. The Republicans representing the haves, the Democrats purporting to represent the have-nots, are at fisticuffs with each other. Both of them are playing to their main constituencies and hoping that, you know, they'll pick up what they need to do. I happen to believe that because of the gerrymandering of the Congress, in which a bunch of Republican legislatures, just take Texas, for example, were able at a single blow to throw out half of their congregations, constituencies. Congregation is a bad word. That doesn't really fly. Because we now have a presidential election coming out in which I predict Hillary Clinton is going to win and win big. There are more Democrats in the United States. But the way that you've arranged them in the Congress comes out so that the Republicans now have control of the Congress for many reasons, including the fact that many Democrats didn't bother to come out and vote in the congressional by-elections. But I think what you're going to see come the presidential election is a reversal of that. But for now, it's going to be head-to-head. And I think, Stu, that while it might sound a little cynical, you're right.
But let me ask you about tactics. Is it more effective for a president to hang in Washington and argue it out with Republican leadership and Democratic leadership, for that matter, or to go essentially on a campaign stop and talk directly to people who are presumably sympathetic with him on this?
That's been tried, Ray. It doesn't work.
What do you mean? Which doesn't work?
It doesn't try the whistle-stop tour.
Well, that's what he's doing.
What are you saying?
That's what he's doing.
No, but I'm telling you what really works in this case is for the president to stand up to them and say, whether he's on a train or whether he's on a plane, and say, that's not going to pass because in the end, they have to compromise. And that's why Stu calls it the same old, and that's right.
But don't they have to talk? In other words, if you're in Ohio giving essentially a campaign-type speech, is that effective compared to talking to the leadership of the House and Senate?
No. I think he is talking to the leadership of the House and Senate. I guarantee it. So you may not know it, they may not show it, but these negotiations go on every level in the state and in the federal government. They're talking to each other, and they're trying to fake each other out. They're trying to play power politics. That's it.
This is why people are apathetic. This is why people don't vote. This is why people don't care. This is why people can't name their representative. This is why people who don't even know what their county legislator's name may be. It just gets to, and not that county politics is far different, of course, than national politics, but the political gridlock is just maddening. It never ends.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll finish up our conversation here. We have a few more topics to discuss. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio. FortHillAutoBody.com. Ta-da! Offering an assortment of toys, gifts, games, retro candy, and novelty items for children and adults in Stuyvesant Plaza and the Clifton Park Center. And Trattoria Rustica, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Since 2001, Chef Davide Manzo, preparing Cucina Napoletana, serving 5 p.m. till closing, except Tuesday when closed. TrattoriaRustica.com.
All right, it's the fourth quarter of the program, and we welcome
punt.
You.
Punt.
Are the concession stands still open?
No, we had to close those down after right before the break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a couple issues to get to, but before we get to those, when we ask you to write letters, you do. And we get letters like this.
From Mark. Good morning. Could it be that Mr. Netanyahu anticipates that the U.S. will become more conservative after President Obama leaves office? Thanks, Mark. And then Pete says, let's see. Dear folks, so Netanyahu's mistake was defining out loud the game they've been playing all along. I've always favored a one-state solution, giving Palestinians equal rights and responsibilities within the defined borders of Israel. This stealth disenfranchisement and land grab is the surest way to make an intractable enemy as witness. Good discussions, as usual. I could respond to it, but you know what I think, and I don't agree with you. Okay, so... So John says, vote in Israel seems to have shifted among the right-leaning groups. Hardliners were brought to vote Likud instead of voting for parties to the right of Likud. Shift not much among voters to the left of Likud. Gave Likud the needed number of seats to prevail. I believe one of the parties to the left got a sizable number of seats and might have prevailed had the right-wing vote been more divided. Well, it doesn't really matter because in the end, I believe Netanyahu is going to be the prime minister no matter what happened because all of those right-wing groups added up to a majority. It might have been better for those who were opposed to Netanyahu if they had voted for the splinter parties, but that's what it is.
Netanyahu's not going anywhere.
No. And Julia says, why is Andrew doggedly harassing teachers? Probably to please campaign donors who may fund a future presidential run. Follow the money. And dear Roundtable, Bibi finally told the truth. He was never for a two-state solution. He was a Sharon protege. Let's see here. Robert says... We did that. We did Roberts. Okay, and let's see. Does somebody come in the meantime? No.
All right, then we are set on that. So we talked about the president on the budget, and I do want to, and I realize this is as we got into the one side of the, you know, same old, same old. Mm-hmm. So now we have to go
balance
with,
it out,
balance it out, and talk with Senate Republicans who are having a little bit of a tiff with their House colleagues over the budget. Mm. And Senate Republicans on Wednesday released an austere budget that maintains strict caps on military spending and cuts trillions of dollars from health care and welfare, sending a rebuff to their House colleagues. House Republicans are trying to evade the spending caps by adding close to $40 billion to military spending through an emergency war funding account that is not subject to the limits. Not only did Senate budget writers not follow suit, they included language in their budget requiring 60 votes in the Senate on any measure that used that approach. And, let's start there. There was also the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, which just for the...
May I repeat? Same ballgame, different inning, different kids. The sandbox has got a lot of finger pointing.
Yes, but
there.
Stu, what do you make of this, as Joe points out, the dissonance between the House
between
and the Senate?
Between the House and the Senate. I mean, you have Republican control of both, and yet one is perhaps more, dare we say, practical.
In whose mind? Yeah. They're all practical in their own mind.
Yeah.
But you know, does
remembering
a proposal...
congressman have to vote run for election every 2 years?
Yeah.
And senators every 6 years.
And it's nice to say we should have more military spending, but okay, $40 billion by putting it through, in essence, an alternative route for funding for under a war clause. Huh? Where is this coming from?
Because don't you think, Stu, that what's happening here is the same technique, the same strategy as Bibi Netanyahu did, knowing full well
it won't go anywhere.
Well, yes, and that they could say security is everything, and we want more army, we want more weapons.
Right, and then point saying they're not for security,
that's
but
right.
We are.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
back to you, Joe.
Okay, but back to the Ray, help. No, there was the point here about. I mean, obviously, and this goes to Stu's cynicism. I hope you don't mind me. I don't use that as a.
I
don't
think
use
it's
that as
very
a,
well said. Very well
a
said.
A slight at all, because I agree with you. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what do you gain in putting whose time, money, and effort are you wasting by saying, all right, we're going to put a budget through and we're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act?
It's a waste of time.
They're playing a political game, an insider's political game. I have noticed lately that no matter how much we talk about state government here, nobody knows nothing. I mean, you know, if we have a vox pop on state government, you get very few calls, even though it's interesting stuff. You get very few calls.
It's the apathy.
So they're playing, yeah, that's the apathy. But, Stu, they're playing a game within their own sphere. They listen to each other. They think anybody cares. They think that they're going to get over on anybody else if they just pursue this particular strategy. And they're wrong.
Well, that's what you said. That's why they run for office. They want to be able to say, I supported money for our military. Or
but will
whatever.
Anybody listen to that? I mean, you know, look, I have a feeling that elections, at least elections around here, are won on the basis of what we could only call perceived character. In other words,
or party allegiance.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that down in your across the river from you. There was an interesting election.
Well, here in Albany as well.
Right. Yeah. So what happened? The party allegiance in Albany certainly takes care of that.
Somewhat active.
You know, yeah, but every once in a while you see somebody who is clearly the more attractive. I don't mean physically attractive. Candidate win. New York City has had Republican mayors. Mm-hmm. Massachusetts, blue state Massachusetts, has Republican governors. So I'm thinking that it isn't the issues, like the ones we're discussing, that are controlling. It really is who the person is and how much confidence people have in that person.
I think this budget argument, the in-house budget argument with Republicans, is much more interesting from the angle of, can the Republicans handle prosperity? So far, they have done a miserable job of handling this newfound majority control, and there's infighting. We have a Senate Republican budget aide quoted in the New York Times who says, some of our members are concerned about the apparent abuse of the emergency account, talking about what the House Republicans are doing. So does it become the classic Democratic circular firing squad now that the Republicans are enjoying, quote-unquote, prosperity?
Well, as I said before, I think this is pretty temporary. I think that we are now seeing this emerging pattern in which Democrats win national elections, presidential elections, because you don't have gerrymandered seats, and people turn out because they get it. They get what a presidential election is, but they don't get the lower on the food chain elections, and they don't turn out. I don't think it's a matter of a circular firing squad. You want to talk to me about the Democrats in the New York State Legislature, I'll adhere to a circular firing squad, but not in the Congress.
Well, the president, there's only been two elections where Democrats won now, and it's been the same guy recently.
Yeah, but I think I think that's the way we're heading. In other words, I think you're now...
Do you hope or do you think?
Well, both. To be perfectly honest with you. But I also think that's happening because, you know, money is the great equalizer. We know that the Supreme Court, the Republican Supreme Court of the United States, has tried to weigh in to give the Republicans a better chance. We know we have the Koch brothers. We know we have all of that. But I do think that Americans understand the presidency a lot better than they understand the Congress.
I would think so. I would think so. You know, as I was reading these stories, I also read the story about the Midwestern congressman who resigned over the Aaron Schock, I believe his name.
Red Walls.
Who basically did his congressional office with taxpayer money, so it resembled a Downton Abbey.
But do you
set.
Really think that that's what that was all about?
Well, there was also other things such as using thousands of dollars for private flights and stuff like that were blatantly blatantly illegal. And, oh, look, he has to resign now. And that was a political investigation, I believe. I hear about this gridlock in Congress where even the Senate and the House Republicans, in theory playing in the same swimming pool, they can't agree with each other. And then this guy out there is basically resigning for all the bad things he did. And this is why people hate politics.
Or for things we don't know about.
Yeah.
All right, we have 2 minutes, and NCAA basketball tips off at 12:15.
University of Arizona will win it all. I'm telling you right now. Set your brackets, people.
The brackets have already been set.
And right. Don't forget about the NIT, because in Poughkeepsie, the story of the day the NIT, the National Invitation Tournament, where the Marist College Red Fox women will be taking on the Temple Owls tonight at 7.
Oh, that's nice. A tough one.
What do you got in that, Ray?
You got to have Marist on here, although, you know, I grew up in a Temple town. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's
and
hard.
The UAlbany women are, they're right there.
They're
if they,
good. Yeah. They're
so
good.
We're hoping to get them. There's going to be regional action
right
here in Albany at the end of this month. Mm-hmm. So I think UAlbany women have to win one or two to get to that. But UConn will be here and everybody else. It's going to be quite a time.
It'll be quite a time. And then we also have UAlbany men play tomorrow night, 7:27.
Oklahoma, number 3.
Will that be on the television?
It will.
Oh, yes.
It'll be on the television. Yeah, it won't be on the same channel that has Rawhide.
Alan, I've seen Ray's brackets. He has Yeshiva to take it all.
Well, I know who's going to take it all. It's hard for me to tell you this.
Yep.
The Great Danes are going to take it.
They're going to take it all? That would be quite a run.
I figure if I say that, I'll get a lot of credit from people around here, even if
it's not. Because you are a hoopster.
True.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm a former.
How was your hook shot?
I was one of those guys. I was one of those guys in gym class. Who always found a way to be at the end of the line when they were taking free throws.
You're the guy wearing the black socks.
He's got a jump shot, but you got to put him on a couple telephone books, and then he jumps off. That's pretty good.
And that's why I think that basketball is a game for freaks.
Oh, cut it out.
What do you mean?
Oh, well, look, the show's over.
All present company excluded.
Alan at WAMC.org, people.
Oh, God. All right.
Marist coverage at PoughkeepsieJournal.com tonight, folks.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Nice plug, Stu. Thank you. Not only was a save, but a plug. That's even better. All right. Thank you very much to Alan and Ray and Stu. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.